Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It is Friday, July 23rd, 2021. Today, as we do each week, we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW senior writer, joins me again with his reporting and editorial analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So last week, Andrew, we spoke about strong sales for trade book publishers in the first half of 2021. But that happy tune may be changing. Early sales data for the first week in July show a slide. Are we seeing signs that sales are set to cool off in the second half of the year?
Yeah, so I would not be surprised to see sales for books cool off a bit in the second half of 2021 for the simple reason that last year was an unexpectedly extraordinary sales year. And our listeners will recall that this period in particular, July, was an especially hot sales period. For example, unit sales of print books fell 1.3% in the week that ended July 10th, 2021. And this compared to the similar week in 2020 at outlets that report to NPD BookScan. And we just now are getting numbers that look like, you know, another small decline in this week's numbers as well. And this after number showed small gains, essentially flattening in June. But again, you know, let me remind you what we were talking about last year at this time. Huge sales gains. Books on race and social justice were selling in huge numbers in 2020. The racial and social justice books took up 6 of the top 10 slots on the bestseller list in 2020, while John Bolton's The Room Where It Happened was a blockbuster bestseller. It was number 1 on the category list. It sold nearly 57,000 copies in the same week of 2020 compared to this week in 2021. And the current dip in sales for this year was due to a drop in adult nonfiction. Units were down 10.2% from July 11th, 2020, and we can see why. Nevertheless, it was a nonfiction book that actually topped the bestseller list for this week, the How I Saved the World by Fox News host Jesse Waters. The book sold just under 34,000 copies in its first week, so not the massive numbers that we saw last year with John Bolton's book, but nevertheless, pretty strong numbers. And once again, some good news here is that even though nonfiction books appeared to be tailing off just a little bit, adult fiction continued to do very well in the most recent week, with print units increasing 22%. That helped by the release of several new bestsellers, including a new Danielle Steele book. It's called 9 Lives, and it sold just over 24,000 copies in its first week, putting it in second place on the adult fiction list.
Well, let's look a little further at bestsellers, Andrew. In last week's issue, PW took inventory of the best-selling individual titles for the first half of 2021, and the top spots include an author we talked about getting canceled earlier this year, and that's Dr. Seuss.
Yeah, let's talk about that. But first, you referenced, you know, our look at the bestsellers of 2021, and that piece is up on the PW site right now. And 2 quick points about that piece to sort of build on some of the things that we talked about last week. And that is, one, the resurgence of adult fiction sales after years in the doldrums. And what makes this all the more remarkable is that there was only one runaway bestseller in the first half of the year, and it's actually a children's book. There was the 10th installment in Dave Pilkey's Dogman series, Mothering Heights, big hit around my household. That has sold upwards of 867,000 copies since its March 23rd release. So even though we've only had one massive selling book, fiction sales continue to show real strength. And the other thing is the strength of backlist sales, which continues week over week to show that, you know, backlist sales are continuing to show strength, which brings me to our friend Dr. Seuss. Now, our listeners may recall the, I'll just say it, totally ginned up discussion, purely political discussion about the canceling of Dr. Seuss books after the estate of Theodore Geisel decided to stop printing 3 early works that included some offensive imagery and words, books that, I might add, were not really selling anyway. But you know, the cries of cancel culture were out there. You know, the outrage on Fox News and in other outlets, you know, sustained the right for weeks, despite the fact that there really was no shadowy sort of canceling going on here. Just a decision, a business decision by an author's estate, and I might add, a pretty good one and a right one. And we know this because of the top 5 sellers of 2021 so far. Dr. Seuss owns 3 of them, including the perennial bestseller, Oh, the Places You'll Go, which placed 2nd overall behind Dave Pilkey, selling more than 584,000 print copies. Now, this book, of course, is a staple at graduation time. It's always on the lists, you know, toward the top of the bestseller list every year. But this year, the estate actually saw a marked increase, 200,000 copies more compared to the book sales last year at this time. And there's a simple explanation for that, probably. One is that we didn't have graduation ceremonies last year because of COVID, and we're having graduation ceremonies this year. And the other thing is, yeah, the media attention from the so-called cancel culture crowd. So cancel culture, no, but great marketing for Dr. Seuss. Oh, yeah.
Well, all right, Andrew. I mean, no matter how much things change, there's no such thing as bad publicity. Newcomer book distributor Bookshop.org, Andrew, offers indie booksellers an online sales option to compete with Amazon. Good news from them this week about substantial growth, though you may have a contrarian take to offer.
Yeah, I do. You know, I absolutely do. But let's be clear, you know, really good news. This is good news that the upstart online bookseller Bookshop.org this month reported that it's on track this month to surpass $15 million returned to independent bookstores since the company began in late 2019. Andy Hunter, who is the CEO of Bookshop.org, told PW that he expects the company to hit the milestone, the $15 million milestone, by the end of July, with total sales surpassing $29 million so far this year. And that's up 17% for the first half of 2021 compared with 2020. And that increase comes despite an expected decline in sales compared to a year ago since April, when, you know, most bookstores around the country began to reopen for normal business. Indeed, in the April to June sales period, sales were down 20% for Bookshop during the comparable period in 2020. But that's actually less than the 30% drop that Hunter had been expecting, for the same reasons that we had discussed earlier, that, you know, book sales are cooling off from what was an exceptionally hot period last summer with a lot of, you know, jam-packed with hit titles. Bookshop.org currently hosts 1,100 bookstores, with 400 using Bookshop exclusively for their e-commerce, and another 700 that use it in addition to their own e-commerce solutions. And in addition to bookstores, Bookshop.org has another 26,000 affiliates, and that's magazines and media outlets and influencers who link back to Bookshop to do their fulfillment for people who want to buy books through their affiliate links. But you mentioned my take, and I don't know if it's contrarian, but it involves a hot topic right now, which is Amazon, and of course, this issue of competition. Now, Andy Hunter told PW that he sees Amazon as a rival, as he should, but a rival that is vulnerable in certain ways. And he told PW that he thinks that there's more awareness than ever of the damage that Amazon can do to communities and to the book ecosystem, and that there is increased antitrust activity happening around Amazon and this sort of social awakening among consumers about how they spend their money and trying to do it in a more socially conscious way. And indeed, you know, Jeff Bezos shooting himself into space in a giant phallus this week kind of highlights a few of the concerns that many Americans do have with Amazon. But, you know, my take is this, and that's that, you know, I think Hunter is engaging in a little bit of wishful thinking. And because I remain convinced that price and service do remain the drivers for the vast majority of American consumers, even those who are book buyers. And, you know, Amazon still has this impenetrable advantage in that regard, right? They're an enormous company with the ability to outprice pretty much anyone. So, you know, I feel like any business that is based on consumers being socially conscious and thinking about how they're spending their money, well, I applaud that message. I'm down with it. But I still think that that's a business that has a low ceiling. And in terms of the antitrust argument, well, the growth of Bookshop no doubt is going to be highlighted by Amazon, right? They're going to look at Bookshop and they're going to tell regulators that, look, see, there is competition and competition that's growing. And even though it's still small, it's evidence that we're not foreclosing anything. So I would love to take this opportunity to celebrate the growth of Bookshop. I think we should do that. But I think the message remains that Bookshop sales remain a drop in the bucket compared to Amazon's.
And we learned this week, Andrew, the content provider Scribd is working on a public offering, initial public offering, with a reported $1 billion valuation. What do you make of that?
Yeah, so that $1 billion valuation for Scribd has really set tongues wagging, right? And rightly so, I think, because, you know, Scribd is a subscription business. And that business model is still very much on the margins of the book business, at least in terms of the major publishers. But in reporting this week in Bloomberg and TechCrunch and a few other places, we learned that Scribd, in fact, has 1 million paid subscribers who pay around $8.99 a month for subscription access to books in the company's offerings. The company also says it's profitable, which is always a good thing, and then it's bringing in about $100 million in annual revenue, which, frankly, is not bad. Now, does that warrant a $1 billion valuation? Well, I guess it depends on how you look at things. And I'll tell you how I look at things. One is that I look out at the landscape and I see every other form of content out there available via subscription, right? Movies and music and games. And while the major publishers remain resistant to subscription, I have to ask, for how much longer, right? Especially now that, you know, my kids, for example, subscribe to Epic through their school. So they're used to having a subscription access model. And the education business is now moving to subscription. So can trade books really be that far behind? Now, the answer, short answer to that is yes. For a while, the majors remained resistant to subscription. And I think it's mostly for one reason. And that is that they still get, at least in the trade realm, they very much rely on power readers. That is, the small number of book buyers, who spend a lot of money on books. And I think the publishers look at that number and say that giving those people access to a lot more reading material at a lower price won't be made up by adding more subscribers, or what they would call a casual reader. But after the pandemic, I think all of the beliefs that publishers held about consumer behavior, especially in the digital realm, are up for a fresh look. And meanwhile, you have Amazon that is actually doing quite well with its subscription offering. And there is the library ebook business, which you could argue sort of resembles a subscription business. So there's a lot to unpack here with the subscription business. And the other thing I would point out too is that Scribd is, by all accounts, pretty stable company with a pretty good platform, and actually has, and this is important, good relationships with the major publishers. They've been patient. They've been smart. And even more smart, I think, is that they have these other services that they're built on, right? Like document access and user-generated content that they host. And that's terrific because that really draws people onto the platform. I guess you'd call that customer acquisition. Well, they don't have to put a lot into customer acquisition because they draw customers in other ways. Now, publishers have been experimenting, right? The majors too have been experimenting with subscription access, most notably HarperCollins. So I think Scribd has very smartly positioned themselves as the company that can handle this kind of ebook access and audiobook access. They do quite well with digital audio too, if and when the majors decide to, you know, give it a shot, or should I say, give it a bigger shot. And I cannot stress enough that they are not Amazon, right? It's another independent company out there. So there's that too. So am I blinking at this billion-dollar valuation for Scribd? No, I'm really not at this point. Look, these kinds of stocks are often about placing a bet. And the bet here is, will the major publishers at some point warm up to subscription access? Because we know consumers are already down with subscription access for virtually all the other content in their lives. And the other question is, the other thing you have to bet on is whether or not Scribd is the company that can make this happen. Now, I don't know, but that's why they call it a bet, you know? And I have to say, I do think the odds are in Scribd's favor that they have a shot at making it work.
Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks for joining me on the program.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, what happened behind closed doors when libraries went into lockdown? In a word, librarians innovated, adjusting work and public services during the pandemic to meet researchers' needs. All the while, they also reimagined their institutions with eyes on the post-pandemic future. Christian Dupont at Boston College found opportunity and inspiration in the unexpected quiet. Dupont is Burns Librarian at BC and Associate University Librarian for Special Collections.
It created a lot of stress for people because everybody has different ways of responding to that health emergency and still do, right? And then this was all mapped this whole last year in the pandemic, across the world, particularly in our country, you know, movements and awareness of social justice issues and that were happening. And so when you are subjecting some of your staff to coming on site, you know, which would pose a greater health risk for them than someone would stay at home, you know, what is the equity in that? How do we balance? How do we share that?
Libraries in lockdown, next on this CCC podcast. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts, and please do follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening. Join us again soon for another Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.